Hospitalizations in North Carolina related to the coronavirus were down again yesterday, now under 1,600, and new cases continue to drop as well. State health officials updated their county alert map, now showing just 27 counties in the red zone with the highest level of community spread. That's down from 61 in the last update at the beginning of the month. 33 counties are now in the yellow zone with the lowest level of community spread. That's also a big improvement. Although Orange, Durham, and Wake counties are all still in that in-between orange zone. Chatham County, though, has moved back into the yellow zone. Meanwhile, on campus, UNC researchers are conducting experiments on masks to determine whether double masking makes any difference. Dr. Philip Clapp is an aerosol toxicology expert at UNC. He says double masking can help reduce the spread of COVID, but it's even more important just to have a mask that fits.
The data that we're sharing at this point shows that there is a benefit of double masking in terms of the fitted filtration efficiency, but I think the fit is key. So what we know about these procedure masks is that the material is very effective. There have been a lot of filtration studies looking just at the material, and it's, you know, upwards of 90% effective at filtering airborne particles. So it's a very effective piece of material. The problem is that they don't fit well to your face. So before you would concern yourself with double masking, I would say it was important. It's very important. And what we do in my home is I check my wife when she's wearing her mask, and I actually check my four-year-old daughter when she's wearing hers. So if you have someone that can check to see the gaps around your face, that's the way that you can get the most immediate benefit from even a single mask. Beyond that, if you've already done that step, you can expect to get a slight bump in the filtration efficiency by adding a second mask on top of it.
That's UNC researcher Philip Clapp speaking there. In other news, the Orange County School Board last night voted 5-2 to change the name of Stanford Middle School before the start of the next school year. Harold Sun reporting that. CW Stanford served on the school board for 26 years from 1941 to 1967. His own personal record is complex, but his time on the board coincided with the period of segregation, including 13 years after Brown v. Board of Education, when Orange County was very slow to integrate its schools despite that Supreme Court order. No decision yet what the school's new name will be. Turning to the courts, a new report from the nonprofit Orange County Bail Bond Justice shows a recent increase in pretrial detentions in the criminal justice system after an initial drop in the first months of the pandemic. Kimberly Brewer is the chair of the nonprofit. She recently discussed the issue with 97.9 The Hill, as our own Elk Harris reports.
The Orange County Bail Bond Justice Project works to change unjust bail practices while providing assistance to those who cannot afford to pay their bail.
We think that, you know, how much money you have shouldn't really determine whether you sit in jail before your trial, because before your trial, you're still presumed innocent, right? That's the way our justice system works.
That was Kimberly Brewer, the chair of the nonprofit. She said during the pandemic, the Orange County Bail Bond Justice Project saw great progress in terms of criminal justice reform from March to mid-September.
What we saw last year was a drastic reduction in detentions and some really good new reforms adopted by Orange County.
During the county's COVID-19 lockdown from March to June, the detentions were at what the nonprofit called an artificial low.
What they said, based on anecdotal observation, this isn't any crunching of numbers on their part, they said that during the lockdown, there were fewer people outside their homes, that law enforcement officers were interacting with fewer people, and they were only stopping people and interacting with them if it was a dangerous situation.
During the early months of the pandemic, magistrates were requiring a cash bond for fewer people than policy dictates, and judges issued no order for arrests for not appearing in court. In non-pandemic times, the Bail Bond Justice Project reports that magistrates require a secured bond or cash bail in 79% of cases involving only misdemeanors, and judges for 38% of those cases.
What we see often, in many cases, is that a person is jailed one day by the magistrate and then released the next day at their bond hearing by the judge. And even one day in jail can have a huge impact on someone's life. So we think, let's really reduce the number of people who are actually jailed.
Despite a decrease of detentions for the majority of 2020, in the last quarter of the year, the Orange County Bail Bond Justice Project saw a reversal of those trends. After the lockdown period, when the court reopened and began its normal operations, delayed orders for arrests and new orders for arrests began to be served on individuals. Looking ahead, Brewer said she hoped Orange County courts officially adopt some of their pandemic practices to keep pretrial detentions low.
But we want to go back and look at those things that were happening during the pandemic and say which of those emergency procedures could be adopted permanently if they're not going to cause any danger to our community. And we think that we showed a drastic reduction in detentions. We showed it's possible. So let's build on that.
You can read the full report or learn more about the nonprofit at ocbailbondjustice.org. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
Elsewhere in crime news, the Orange County Sheriff's Office has reported a spike in catalytic converter thefts, with 8 reported this month alone. Sheriff Charles Blackwood says thieves target catalytic converters because they're easy to steal and hard to trace, and they contain valuable metals like palladium and platinum, especially catalytic converters in hybrid vehicles, Toyota Priuses being targeted in particular. Blackwood says you can protect your own vehicle by keeping it in a garage at night or parking in a well-lit space, ideally near surveillance cameras if possible. And if you have any information about those recent thefts, contact the Orange County Sheriff's Office. Finally, the latest on a controversial health trend, raw milk, or milk that's fresh from the cow. It's growing in popularity, but it's still heavily restricted. 3 years ago, North Carolina lawmakers passed a bill that allows you to buy raw milk, but only if you're willing to also buy part of a cow. Kyra Miles has more on this from Carolina Connection.
When Catherine Williams runs out of milk, she doesn't go to the grocery store. She goes straight to the source.
Fresh raw milk from the cow tastes sweet like ice cream. It's a beautiful, delicious food.
10 years ago, Williams' love for cows led her to raw milk, and she never looked back. Now the family of the Chapel Hill mom drinks 3 gallons a week, and not just for the taste, but also for their health.
I think it healed my asthma. I was shocked to discover this. It wasn't like a crusade I went on. But when you can't breathe and something helps you breathe, discussion is over. Breathing wins. What raw milk became was actually almost a form of medicine.
There's skepticism about health claims in unpasteurized raw milk, but it's becoming a popular health trend. And while raw milk is illegal to sell directly in North Carolina, 3 years ago, the legislature legalized cow shares, opening an avenue for consumers to raw milk. A cow share is a contract between a farmer and a consumer. That's like a cow sponsorship. You buy a portion of the cow, the farmer milks the cow, and you pick up your milk from the farm. This way, it's technically not the milk being sold, it's the cow. Consumers like Williams pay $150 a year and $9 a gallon as a shareholder at Sykes Family Farm in Mebane.
Come on, baby. You want some minerals?
Jeff Sykes took over the 70-year-old family dairy farm in 1992. But 3 years ago, due to a declining dairy industry, he had to sell most of his cows.
Right after we sold out, we were trying to figure out what to do, and a neighbor had mentioned that they're in Virginia they were selling cow shares.
In about a year, Sykes attracted 34 shareholders, and these cow shares helped the Sykes avoid shutting down their farm. Cooperative Extension agent Marty Day has helped dozens of farmers, including Sykes, to set up cow share programs.
We have a lot more people doing the necessary work to set up cow shares and to meet this market demand. It's become a big part of the calls that I get, the interest from not only consumers, but also from the farmers.
Day helps farmers navigate this growing market for raw milk, but there's still some serious controversy in the health community.
Some people think raw milk cures everything, and other people believe that raw milk is like toxic waste.
A 2015 study from the National Institute of Health reported that 1/3 of raw milk samples contained harmful pathogens like Salmonella, E. coli, and Listeria. And unpasteurized raw milk is the frequent source of foodborne illnesses. State Environmental Health Director Larry Michael's job is to protect the public from potential health hazards.
According to national data, this is from 2009 to 2014, the risk of illness is over 800 times higher for consumers of unpasteurized dairy products than consumers of pasteurized products.
There have been a few European studies that show a correlation between raw milk and lower asthma rates, but most findings report that the proven health risk outweigh the possible benefits of unpasteurized milk. So from a public health perspective,
the only thing that I would advocate for is to not allow the consumption of raw milk, period.
Some legislators are trying to outlaw cow shares as a way to access raw milk. But for now, consumers can help local farmers by incorporating raw milk into their diets. And Mebin, I'm Kyra Miles.
Head to our website, chapelboro.com, to get even more local news, including first look photos from inside the new Chapel Hill Wegmans that's set to open tomorrow at 9 a.m. Sports Right Now, brought to you by Wegmans, opening tomorrow in Chapel Hill. Individual honors this week for some Tar Heel athletes. First off, in men's basketball, where Kerwin Walton was named ACC Freshman of the Week after scoring 33 combined points in wins over Northeastern and Louisville, shooting 8 of 14 from three-point range. Walton is the fourth different Tar Heel to earn Freshman of the Week honors. Only one other team has ever had four different freshmen win that award. And that was Wake Forest back in 1979. The ACC Women's Basketball Freshman of the Week is also a Tar Heel. Deja Kelly also scored 33 combined points in two games, including 19 to lead UNC in a road win over Clemson. In baseball, UNC sophomore Austin Love won ACC Pitcher of the Week honors after pitching six hitless innings and striking out nine in Carolina's season opener against James Madison. Tar Heels are back in action today, hosting Elon at 3:30. They also moved up this weekend series against Virginia due to the rain that we're expecting to get this weekend. That series will now begin on Thursday. And finally, a team honor for Tar Heel men's lacrosse. They moved into the number one spot in this week's national coaches poll for the first time since 2017. Duke is just behind at number two. And elsewhere in local sports, Duke basketball is finally back on the winning track. They got their fourth straight win last night, 85-70. Won over Syracuse. And in hockey, the Carolina Hurricanes fell to Tampa Bay last night, 4-2 at the final.